is the New South Wales Country Hour with Michael Condon on ABC Radio New South Wales.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to the program. We'll be looking mainly at the fire situation and the impacts for primary producers as well. We'll be talking to the local federal member for the region of Eden Monaro, Mike Kelly, and we'll also be talking to a couple of the reporters on the scene throughout the state at the moment. Gavin Coots in Ulladulla will be crossing there shortly. But before we do that, let's get the latest in regards to what's happening with the fires.
ABC Radio, bushfire information.
And joining me now from the RFS is Cathy Moore. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So at the moment, obviously, things have, the weather-wise, things are a bit more benign, but the concern is for a little bit later on, I suppose, that you're trying to shore things up at the moment.
Yes, we are. So currently there's no total fire bans for today, but they're still very widespread, very high and high fire dangers across the state. So firefighters are taking advantage of the easing conditions today to try and strengthen those containment lines of all the fires burning across the state before conditions worsen come Saturday.
Which is not an easy task, I gather.
No, it's not. So we're looking at over 104 bushfires burning across the state. 52 of those are still listed as uncontained. So in looking at figures, the total fire of hectares burnt this year alone is already exceeds the total amount of hectares burnt in the last 3 years combined. So we have a lot of fire on the ground, and the firefighters have a huge task ahead of them to get these contained.
The worst fires in New South Wales in terms of acreage since 1974, I gather, but many more houses lost this time.
Yes, there is. Sadly, we're looking at around 1,300 homes have been lost so far this fire season. 382 of those we have confirmed have been lost on the south coast in those fires that came through earlier this week.
Okay, yes, indeed. And a number of towns nearly wiped off the map as well. Now, what advice are you giving to holidaymakers at the moment?
Yeah, so we do have what we're calling a tourist leave zone on the south coast for the bushfires. So we're asking anyone who's holidaying on the south coast, particularly in the general area, Batemans Bay to the Victorian border, to leave before Saturday. So leave before it's too late. Relocate away from the area, away from any fire-affected areas. This also extends to any residents in those areas. If their bushfire plan is to leave, then they need to leave before Saturday also.
Okay, and what particular areas are you saying, the hot spots, where you're saying maybe if you're a tourist you shouldn't be there?
So we're looking pretty much on that south coast from Batemans Bay right down to the Victorian border, so any of those general vicinities around there. But it also looks into any other fires across the state that might still be quite active fire involved. The conditions coming through on Saturday are unpredictable. They're looking at those to be as bad, if not worse, than what New Year's Eve were. So there is a threat in all fires, not just those on the south coast.
So is it the heat or is it the wind? What are you worried about for the Friday, Saturday?
So mainly on the Saturday, it's probably combined the heat and the wind. So they're looking at it's going to be widespread areas of extreme fire risk, which is up there.
Okay.
In the highest levels, yep.
And as bad or possibly worse than what we saw on New Year's Eve?
Yes, that is what they are predicting.
Okay. And what about road closures? Are there you've tried to, I gather, open as many roads as you possibly can?
Yeah, there's still a number of roads closed across the state, so we are asking people to have a look at live traffic to see which roads in their areas may be closed. We are opening roads in that south coast area to allow people to relocate out of those areas. Just follow the advice of the police on the ground or emergency services as to those conditions on those roads. Some have been put down to reduce speed limits and the like just for the safety of the people travelling through.
Because I understand there are some road closures intermittently on things like the King's Highway, also the Princess Highway, those sorts of things. So I guess it depends and there is advice along the way, but you can check it out on livetraffic.com.
Yes, absolutely. And some roads may close without notice if we do get an increase in fire activity that might impact a road. So that people need to be aware of that and look at their travel plans before they leave home.
And the other thing is drive to conditions too. We were hearing people getting out of Naruma yesterday saying it was very, very smoky. Visibility was very, very low, up to, only up to about 50 metres in parts.
Yes, we do ask people to drive to the conditions for that and, have your headlights on and the, yeah.
And also, I guess, the potential for trees to fall on the road as well.
There is a potential, and that's a lot of the reasons why we leave the roads closed as long as we do, so that we can go down and make sure those roads are safe. Not just for the trees falling, but also to make sure the roads haven't been fire effective and have holes that might make it harder to drive along as well.
And do you have any intelligence as to what areas there are that we are talking about some of those closures in terms of the roads?
No, not on that one. To, as we say, just look on that live traffic and they'll have them more up to date as to what's open, what's closed.
Okay, and the activity at the moment is trying to shore things up and put in brakes and whatever as much as you can, in as many of those fire grounds as you can.
Yes, they are, and crews are trying to strengthen as many of those containment lines as they can in an effort to make them more secure before that weather does deteriorate come Saturday.
Okay, and that's what people are concerned about. Cathy Moore from the RFS, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
It's coming up to 11 minutes past 12 on the New South Wales Country Hour.
You're listening to the Country Hour
on ABC Radio New South Wales.
Well, the fire danger remains high throughout New South Wales, as we've seen military ships and aircraft delivering supplies to towns cut off by the bushfires. The death toll in New South Wales has risen to at least 15 people. Several people still missing. Thousands in coastal towns have fled to the shore as those fires ravaged their towns and turned the sky red. And people have slept in cars, on the beach, in parks and other makeshift evacuation centres. Some towns, of course, we're hearing running out of water, food and petrol. And we're talking now to the MP for Eden Monaro, Mike Kelly, who says that the catastrophic fire season is unprecedented in scale and ferocity. And he says we need a radical rethink in how we manage bushfires from now on in.
It is. We're being tested this summer as we've never been tested before. Oh, I've never seen this scale and coverage of fire crisis ever really in the region here. You know, the 2003 fires were massive, but that was mainly the west and the ACT area. But this, in the 42,000 square kilometres I've got, which is like bigger than 66 countries, we're pretty much under fire threat from top to bottom and east to west. It's just shocking. And the scale of the property loss, and more importantly, the loss of lives, has been absolutely gut-wrenching, and we're going to need a lot of help. And I'm just grateful now that we are seeing ADF support in the area here coming. We've got HMAS Tools, an amphibious support vessel, that should be here hopefully in the region tomorrow, and also the MV Sycamore, which is a contracted vessel the Navy has, as well as some Army aviation supports coming in now, Chinooks and Taipans and Blackhawks. So it's very gratefully received, but I have to tell you, mate, those fires out there, just absolutely buggered. I had one of them telling me the previous record they had for these constant back-to-back team rotations was 4 weeks, and they've now been at it for 6 weeks, and they're just, you know, really stretched now. So it's terrible times, and particularly, as I say, the loss of life of people were loved and valued in our community, and we're bracing ourselves for more bad news to come.
Well, this is the thing, because the weather isn't set to improve; it's set to get worse on Saturday, but already we've seen entire towns basically destroyed.
Yeah, look, you know, it's gut wrenching. Just seeing the scenes in Cobargo, it was a place where my Kelly family ancestors bought the first property in Australia back in 1860, and you know, just seeing those beautiful little historic buildings and the wonderful small businesses.
It was a gorgeous looking little town, wasn't it?
Oh, just, you know, picture postcard stuff, but most importantly, it was the wonderful small business people operating out of those wonderful streetscape that really gave the town the character to. And you know, their livelihood's just gone now. And, you know, it's a resilient, wonderful community there, but my God, they've had a massive kick in the guts. And I was just down there recently with Joel Fitzgibbon, meeting with dairy farmers in the hall there, so, you know, lovely old wooden hall, and just shocked is an understatement. But, and losing Robert and Patrick Selway from that community, the Selway family, loved and respected in the valley. And now we've had, you know, reports of even more fatalities coming through. So, and in the southwest area, the Snowy Valleys, you know, we've lost homes there. Farmers have been given 48 hours notice now that they're supposed to be moving their stock if they can, with this Duns Road fire really threatening now, and the Snowy Monaro area farmers too. And they just don't know. They're scratching their heads of how they're supposed to be moving that stock. So we really need people sitting down now working out how we can help them do that. before the more severe conditions kick in, as well as looking at how we can coordinate reception centres being activated to deal with these evacuees from the south coast too. So
as a former veteran yourself, I mean, seeing the Army involved, you must be heartened by that, but the Army and the Navy involved. But I guess you would also be wondering why this didn't happen earlier.
Look, the ADF operates under a framework called DAC, Defence Assistance to the Civil Community, and that support has been rendered, you know, right around the country as it's been asked for.
Isn't it, being asked for?
That's right. And also, I mean, and I'm really grateful that my calls in the last couple of days have been responded to, and we're getting that support coming down the south coast now in significant shape. But, you know, what I'm talking about too is the long term here. But we are seeing unprecedented stuff meeting the projections that were being made. So, for example, our fire season is now 19% longer than they were in the 1970s. And what we're having now is this overlapping of fire seasons with the northern and southern hemispheres, which means it's much harder for us to draw on air asset support as well, you know, that we used to share. And a classic example of that was these California fires overlapped with the New South Wales fires. So, and also what I've referred to, the personnel demand as well, with the Climate Council saying that by 2030 we're going to need double the number of firefighters we have now. And I spent a lot of time with these units on their presentation nights, and, you know, it's an ageing group as well. We need to really sit down now, as soon as we've met the immediate crisis here, and think about a massive strategic rethink about our national response to these mega catastrophes. It's going to take a whole nation effort to look at the projections that are coming, and we know that they will happen. We have to crack on with this now and work out how to deal with it.
Do you think, though, that the LNP government have been caught napping in regards to this?
Look, I think we should have been planning for this a long time ago. But the projections that have been there have been more urgent calls in recent times that, you know, we all should have been taking notice of. I know I've been calling for a lot more out-of-the-box thinking too, you know, like we need to be looking at how we could, say, provide a lot of drone coverage during the risk months with high-quality sensors that will detect low thermal and smoke signatures that can linger without having pilot fatigue factors, and investing in things like that. It's just, I think, a major fault that we haven't comprehensively looked at how we're going to deal with the projections that were being made. We're just sort of kicking the can down the road. But I don't want to get into a blame game on this. But the thing is now to look to the future and get on with getting our strategic plan done for the future now. Let's do this in a bipartisan way right across the parliament and involving the state governments and all the agencies. What is the best way now to deal with this situation, and particularly how do we manage the personnel demands that we're going to be facing in the future?
Well, this is the point. I mean, there's a limit to what volunteers can do. There's been some talk also and a little bit of money provided for those people that have been out of work. The federal government also, there's $6,000 for people that are privately employed or self-employed tradies, those sorts of things. Do we need to, you know, we need to look at maybe training up the Army to get them in to help out as well, something like that, so they can get a break?
We'd need a major rethink in structural terms like
that. So that sort of thing is on the cards, you think, or should be?
I don't think we need to be retraining the ADF. You know, fire fighting skills are very specific, but there are capacities that exist within the ADF that under direction could be used. Things like, you know, bringing out engineers' heavy plant to clear fire breaks, their bulk water carrying capacity, logistics support, transport.
So there are options there.
Yeah, there are, but we need to go beyond that and look at things like maybe creating, and I know I'm just going to be throwing lots of ideas out there in the months ahead, but, you know, and I've talked to Darren Chester about this, the possibility of a national firefighting reserve with similar legislative and other frameworks as to what we have with the defence reserve. We just have to start pulling ideas together now and thinking.
What about the idea of setting up a fund as well, the bushfire fund?
Yeah, look, I think, the disaster response in general, because what we're seeing with climate change is just extremes at both ends of this. So here in Edmonero, I've dealt with floods, and fires and massive storms, and, we've had everything. And all of them require large-scale infrastructure, recovery, business recovery, economic help, and how we actually deal with the immediate crisis. So,
About a policy on reducing carbon emissions? I mean, we've got a climate scientist on the country out today talking about these as the climate fires, and mm-hmm. that we need to reduce emissions.
Look, there's no doubt about that, that the strategic approach to this has got to involve how we properly come to grips with the climate change threat, listen to the experts, and do this in a way that we can also then go on to the international stage and ensure that, we're going out there in good faith to drum up the support that's needed by the whole world to deal with this. We definitely have a big contribution to make here, but it's also an opportunity because, we can be using the farmers to help sequester carbon and boosting their economic foundations through that type of approach. And on top of, using renewable energy to bring back manufacturing, as Ross Garnaut has highlighted in his fantastic book, Superpower, there's big opportunities for us in actually tackling this issue. But we are the canary in the coal mine in this country on this issue, and we're living it right now. I can't see 50
meters. So do you think the political will has changed then as a result of this?
I hope so. I really hope so. The time for this is decades long gone, and we need to do what we can now to prevent absolutely catastrophic climate change from happening in the future, and then working out how to manage what we've got to live with for the foreseeable future now. I can't see 50 metres in front of me right now, the just the health impacts of this massive smoke problem that we've got through the region is another dimension to this. So the urgency and I think the awareness must be there now. If this doesn't wake people up, I don't know what will.
That's Member for Edmonero, Mike Kelly, and Minister for Drought and Disasters, David Littleproud, talks about the mobilisation of the Australian Defence Force. He says when he's been getting the requests, he's been approving them within minutes.
The Defence Force acts as soon as the states put a request into us. I have a matter of a couple of hours to approve a request, but we've been approving them in a matter of minutes. Obviously, I've been on call.
Yeah.
All Christmas, and as soon as we get one, we've been approving them in a matter of minutes. But it's strategically planned, and that's what our fire commissioners strategically plan and look ahead, and our emergency service personnel think ahead. And the other thing is that people get frustrated by the time it takes. Sometimes that's just because it's not safe for them to make the assessments. State agencies need to be able to get people on the ground to make some of those assessments before they specifically call in for specific assets. So they do it as quickly as they can. But we've already tragically lost a number of lives, and three of those have been professional men and women that have given their lives to their communities and their nation in trying to defend us. So we've obviously don't want to put more people in harm's way. It's getting the balance right, and that's why we just say to people, please, help is on the way, but you've just got to be calm and understand that you will get looked after. It's just a matter of time. It's just about making sure everyone stays safe. We have briefings to understand the quantity of food and water that's available. The briefings that we're getting from supermarkets, and we're working with the supermarkets as granular as that, we understand there's at least 2 days of provisions available in these communities. So what we're trying to do is make sure that we prioritise where they're underneath that, and we can get supplies to them as quickly as we can. And that's why we've sent in more helicopters and fixed-wing aircraft. So the state agencies will prioritise that around moving their firefighters, getting in provisions. And so the Defence Force simply takes their direction from them, and the state governments have got priority lists in which they task the ADF to undertake.
That's David Littleproud, the Minister for Drought and Disasters, 24 minutes past 12 on the New South Wales Country Hour.
The New South Wales Country Hour with Michael Condon on ABC Radio New South Wales.
Well, let's cross to Maruya now, and the ABC reporter is Melissa Clark. She's there at the moment. Good afternoon.
Hello.
So you're standing outside the Woolies. We heard reports that people were stocking up and there were big queues. Is that still the case there at the moment in Maroola?
Yeah, there's still queues at the Woolworths. People started lining up at around 6 a.m. this morning. Woolies didn't actually open until 9 o'clock, so a good 3 hour wait for some people. They're only letting about 20 people in the store at a time, partly to just try and stop any rushes in the supermarket itself, but also partly because they haven't got a lot of staff at the Woolworths here, because a lot of the locals are either dealing with the bushfire crisis themselves, have evacuated. I was told one of the staff members in the Woolworths there today lost their own home, but is still there helping open up the store today. So there's a lot of people waiting. It's their first chance to really stock up ahead of either leaving for the visitors, but also for locals who are planning to stay around over the next couple of days. This has been their opportunity, so they've been willing to wait for a couple of hours to get their hands on dry food.
Yes, that's right. So, and I understand that the other issue has been, in many centres, has been water as well as food. And I gather that some of the trucks supplying the supermarkets, they've had trouble getting in.
Yeah, so the Woolworths here doesn't have any meat or cold food. Their power was out in Maroola for a couple of days, and it only restored last night. They gave away all of their meat to the evacuation centre. So at the moment in the Woolworths there, it's just dry food and packaged food on the shelves. Bottled water as well is running out, although water supply is working in town in Maroola. So at least for those staying here, there are still options for getting water. The fruit shops and the bakeries are all pretty much making do with what they've already got in their inventory on hand. They certainly haven't had an opportunity to be resupplied. So there's a bit of make do. But look, I spoke to one customer who was at Woolworths this morning, a local man who lives at Maroola Heads, just on the coast, whereas the main township is just a little bit upriver. And he was very pleased because he was picking up a load of nappies, and he said he would rather run out of food than nappies. So he was very happy to pick up a supply to get him and his four kids through the next couple of days while they bunker down here.
Right, okay. Now, in terms of, we're hearing also that the advice from the RFS is for all tourists, domestic and international, as well to leave the south coast ahead of those dangerous fire conditions this weekend. Are you seeing that already from Maroola, people trying to get out?
Absolutely. That started from first thing this morning. For a lot of visitors here, as soon as they could get petrol, they wanted to leave, and they would have been happy to leave a day or two ago, except that petrol was the thing. Petrol and road closures were the thing holding them back. As soon as they've been able to fill out, most people here are heading south through Bermagui onto Bega, and then heading inland to Cooma, and from there going where they need to go. There are some people who are trying to find the way north to Sydney, which they can if they go through, at this stage, if they go through Browlea and then pick up on the main highway once they get to Batemans Bay. We're hearing reports of very long delays. But at the moment, as far as the most up-to-date information we have is that those routes north and south are both still open. But there is a lot of uncertainty. A lot of people are asking, is it true that the roads are open, that they've heard rumours of this before, so aren't necessarily convinced in hearing the message this time that the roads are open. So a lot of people are looking for reassurance that the route is clear. And I spoke to some foreign visitors who were just very confused in general. I spoke to an elderly French couple who have been caught here for a couple of days, desperately want to return to Sydney, but are very confused about the information. Their English wasn't great, so trying to understand that, as well as the general difficulty that everyone is facing in getting out, it's proving quite challenging.
Now, I gather that you've been looking on the live traffic app to see what roads are closed and what roads are open. So around you, are people able to get out? Is that the intelligence so far, what you're hearing in terms of the app, or what you're seeing in terms of the app?
Yeah, so at the moment, there's free-flowing traffic through Maroola. It's definitely eased up during the day. For people heading south, they are able to get through town. They do have to take the coast route to get down to Bega, so part of Princes Highway is still closed around that Cobargo area where some of the worst fires were. So the information we have there is take the coastal roads through Bermagui, then down to Bega, so you can get to Bega from there and then get onto the Snowy Mountains Highway.
And northward, there are still blockages as well, but if for those at Maroo are looking to go north, they can turn along George Bass Drive, which takes them along the river through Browlea and Tomakin, and that way you can get them up towards Batemans Bay. So the most up-to-date information we have from people who are travelling and from the apps is that those routes are open, but of course, these are fluid situations, so it's always possible these things will change again.
Absolutely, yes. And, of course, we were just talking to the RFS and they were saying roads might be open, but then they can be closed, of course, at short notice. And we are seeing big queues. I've got a text in from someone just then saying that they've travelled 4.2 kilometres in the last hour. So it is pretty heavy going in some parts.
Yeah, and look, a lot of these roads are single-lane traffic.
Yeah.
So even even where they are open and everyone is heading in the same direction, it is going to be slow. There's a lot of caravans on the road as well, which and heavy traffic. There's plenty of trucks and emergency services that still need to get around. We are constantly seeing here in Maroo fire trucks, police vehicles that are racing to get somewhere. And need to be able to get around as well. So that does hold up traffic too, but obviously for very critical reasons.
Now, you were saying that people are trying to get petrol. I was hearing reports that there were some stations were limiting the amount of petrol that they were selling, like up to $50, and some stations were running out of diesel.
Yeah, so here there was a $60 limit that was imposed. So most people were able to fill up. Obviously, some of the bigger cars couldn't fill up with $60, but it's certainly enough to get them to bigger centres because we know there have been fuel deliveries to places like Bega and Batemans Bay, but that hasn't been the case in a lot of these smaller coastal towns as well. So they are rationing it somewhat. And some petrol stations have remained closed even though the power's back on, so we are presuming that they are out of petrol. So although there have been some of those refuelling options in the bigger centres, some of the smaller towns are really just rationing what petrol they have left, as well as we've been told from authorities that they are keeping some in reserve to make sure that the fire trucks, police vehicles, SES workers still have remaining supplies here, so they're being prioritised. So yes, there is rationing of some level going on.
Okay, all right. Well, and you've been doing crosses to ABC News 24 as well, so you've had a busy morning, so I'll leave you to it. So maybe you'll have a bit of a rest.
No, we'll see how we go.
No rest for the wicked, Melissa.
Well, there's plenty to do.
I can imagine. Yes, I can imagine.
We'll be busy too.
Yes, indeed. All right, but thanks for your time on the Country Hour today.
Thanks very much.
It's 28 minutes to one here on the New South Wales Country Hour.
This is the New South Wales Country Hour with Michael Condon on ABC Radio New South Wales.
You're listening to The Country Hour, and shortly we'll be crossing to a resident at Bermagui, and we'll also be talking to a professor from the university, the Australian National University, who's dubbed these fires in the American Scientific Journal. She's dubbed these fires the climate fires. So we'll be hearing from her shortly, and also from Gavin Coote in Ulladulla, an ABC reporter who's in Ulladulla at the moment. You're listening to The Country Hour. It's time to find out what's happening with the weather. Rose Bars at the Bureau. Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Michael. How are you going?
Very well. So all eyes really on the weather situation. We have a bit of a respite at the moment, but it's going to heat up for Saturday.
That's absolutely right. So during today and tomorrow, I wouldn't pretend that it's cool. Temperatures are still rising to the mid-40s across much of western New South Wales. But at least
cooler
the south
on the coast, yeah.
Exactly, exactly. Those areas that are very active in terms of fire activity at the moment are seeing something of a respite during both today and tomorrow. But as you suggest, into Saturday, we start to see a real increase in fire weather. So a cold front starts to move across the state during during the early hours of Saturday in the southwest, and that will draw very, very warm and hot and dry west to northwesterly winds across the state. So that means that we're very likely to see fire weather warnings across pretty much the entirety of the southeast, some of the south of the state and central parts as well, with those extremely strong winds. Now, on top of that, we have a significant wind change coming through in the late afternoon and into the evening. Particularly along the coast where we're seeing some of those very active fires currently. So because of that, we end up seeing a situation that looks quite similar in a lot of ways to what we saw on New Year's Eve, similar kind of setup. And we all saw how destructive that could be. So, yeah, it's certainly the day to watch is Saturday.
Okay, and that's the information, and that's as a result of that, on the advice from the Bureau, the RFS, they're telling all tourists and domestic and international tourists to leave the South Coast area ahead of what could be the dangerous fire conditions. So not just the heat, but also the wind changes as well are the concern.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, fire, in order to spread and become this really, really active and really especially dangerous fire weather patterns, we need not just hot weather but also very dry, which obviously has been persistent across several months now, and on top of that, extremely windy. Now, this front moving across is causing extremely strong west-northwesterly winds ahead of it, and that's when we'll start to see fire dangers peaking. And then we have this wind change coming through, which can change the direction of the fires and actually make them behave in quite unpredictable and chaotic ways.
Okay, and look, any respite ahead for in terms of weather?
Well, the good news is behind that cold front, we see temperatures decreasing, particularly in that extremely impacted area, with temperatures dropping down to being more like in the low 20s along the south coast. So certainly a little bit of respite in terms of the temperatures. We also see the potential for a little bit of rain moving across the south of the state during the later parts of the weekend and into the start of next week. Now, at this stage, we're not yet able to say exactly where we'll see that the highest total. But since it is a multi-day feature, it's quite likely that most places in the southeast will see at least a little bit of rain.
Okay, a little bit of rain, so it's a drop in temperature and the possibility of rain.
Exactly. And look, while we'd like to give even better news than that, it's at least a bit of respite from the conditions that we're seeing over the next few days and into Saturday.
Okay, all right. So when's that respite likely to come? Early next week?
During Sunday we start to see the real impact of that front, and then it looks like Monday and Tuesday will be sort of the peak days for seeing slightly larger areas of rainfall.
Okay, well, fingers crossed we get a fair bit of it. Thanks for that, Rose.
No worries, Michael.
Rose Barr at the Bureau there, it's 23 minutes to 1.
You're listening to The Country Hour.
On ABC Radio New South Wales.
Got a text from Amy saying on the Princes Highway just before 12 Miles Road that's 29 kilometres has taken them 2 hours. They've seen 8 police cars with sirens just down the highway heading towards Conjola. They're heading up to Sydney, not sure if they're going to get through. And a similar tale from Nerida from Winona, who's said they've waited 4 hours to get to Lake Conjola, and again also seen 5 police cars speeding south. So there's obviously some issues at the moment in Lake Conjola as well, so we'll try and get some more information on that for you here on the New South Wales Country and later on in the afternoon on ABC Local Radio. Well, people fleeing the devastation of the bushfires on the New South Wales south coast are coming to grips with the enormity of the catastrophe. For many living in isolated parts of the region, they've been largely cut off from how widespread it is. Jenny, who didn't want to give her last name, has lived on the shores of Wallaga Lake, 10 kilometres from Bermagui. She made the decision to leave her home in the early hours of this morning and head to Canberra. She told Michael Kavanagh it's only then that she realised just how bad it is.
I went to a meeting yesterday evening with the police and the Rural Fire Service in Bermagui, and their advice was that Friday and Saturday will be catastrophic in Bermagui, Fairhaven, Wallaga Lake, Beauty Point, and the sensible thing was to get out if you've got petrol in your car, leave. So I did.
This has been going on for several days. On New Year's Eve, you could see the smoke and the threat of the fire. Why did you not go then?
I don't know. At the time, I thought, it's not going to get me. I'll be okay. So I got the text messages coming through. Cobargo was to leave. They got the first message, I think, about 1 o'clock in the morning, and then Coolagalite, and then at about 4:15, the text message came through to evacuate where I was to Bermagui. And so I'd already packed up. I had my fire plan ready, so I'd already packed up my car and just went into town.
When you made that decision and to leave at 5:30 to head to Canberra where you are now?
No, that was on New Year's Eve. I went into Bermagui. But I'd been in Bermagui and then back home again and then back down to Bermagui and then back home. And then last night they gave out the warning, the catastrophic warning.
Well, when you left this morning for Canberra at 5:30, at that stage, did you feel that you were in any danger?
No, I didn't feel in danger at that stage. I felt relief that I'd made the decision to go. Driving along the road and seeing trees on fire, then I felt danger. You couldn't see. It was so, the smoke is so thick, just couldn't see. So I was driving with my hazard lights on. I was the first person to go along the Cobargo Road this morning. It's been closed since the fire hit Cobargo. So I didn't feel in danger. I felt relief that I'd made the decision to go.
How stark was it when you were going through Cobargo? Because in a way, you've all been isolated in different pockets. You say you saw the trees, there's stock along the road. What greeted you as you were going through and how did that impact?
When they say about post-traumatic stress, I understand what they feel. Seeing houses that you've driven past thousands of times that are just rubble, just absolute rubble. Seeing cows just smoking because they've been burnt. Seeing trees actually on fire. So, and getting to the junction of the Cobargo Road and the Princes Highway, and looking up the road and seeing Cobargo is gone. And I think because we've had no power, I've had no electricity, I've had no contact with the outside world, not even phone. I've not known, basically. We've heard little bits and pieces, but we hadn't heard, we hadn't seen anything, and we hadn't been updated with what was going on. The RFS they've been absolutely amazing, but they haven't told us everything because I suppose they didn't want to scare us or upset us. Or seeing it this morning, it was devastating. It's absolutely devastating.
Given that you had a fire plan, were you tempted to stay?
No. I was tempted to stay until they said catastrophic. As soon as they used the catastrophic word, my house is above normal fire rating. But as soon as they said the catastrophic word, had I not been on my own, I might have stayed, but I don't think so. It's empty. There's no one there now. Everyone's just moved out or gone into town. But because there's no power, you can't get petrol in town. Once I made that decision, I'm glad I made it.
You also have a business in Bermagui itself. That's obviously not operating now.
No.
Are you going to go back?
Absolutely. It's where my heart is. You know, if my house goes, it will take years. It's going to take years for our community to recover from this, but I will still go back. It's where my heart is. It's my happy place. But trying to get people to build houses down there when there's so much that's been wiped out. So I'll stay up in Canberra for now until I know what's going on. And that's the other thing. I'm now in Canberra not knowing what's going on down there because there's no communications coming out. So, you know, I left the house this morning and I made my bed because I always make my bed when I leave my home. I go out for a day, I make my bed, and I might not have a home and a bed to go back to.
That's Jenny, who's a resident near Bermagui, who this morning was forced to flee those fires because of the warnings there. It's 16 minutes to one on the New South Wales Country Hour. Well, let's turn our attention now to ABC reporter Gavin Coote. He's been heading south, travelling through the fire-ravaged towns of Sussex Inlet, Lake Cajola, and He's now in Ulla Dulla, and he says the locals he's seen are traumatised and the scene post the fires is almost surreal.
That's right, Michael. I'm sort of pushing south now as some of the sections of the Princes Highway reopen. I wasn't able to get any further south of about Sussex Inlet yesterday because it's still a very active fire ground. So this has kind of been the first day a lot of people have been able to get a real sense of just how close the fire got to homes. I mean, obviously it destroyed many, many homes. In places like Conjola Park, there were about 80 homes that have been confirmed destroyed. But even just seeing these just large swathes of bushland that have been completely blackened, and then right next to it, homes unscathed. It's just incredible. But also just seeing, you know, for your rural listeners, obviously they'd be interested to hear about how the agricultural land's doing, and the, you know, Milton, just north of here, north of Ulla Dulla, very prime dairying country, and it's just really quite surreal seeing these huge blackened areas of what would usually be lush dairy countryside, and there are still, you know, cattle sort of grazing. I've got no idea how, but it's quite a surreal scene.
Well, apparently we've heard reports of people driving on the highway seeing dead cattle, dead livestock, dead sheep on the side of the road, those sorts of things. So obviously there will be a toll there.
There's no doubt. Once again, it's miraculous that these fires have skipped whole homes and communities and also livestock. There are areas where they're sort of slightly exposed farmland where one side is a paddock, it'll be completely burnt, the other also burnt, but then in the middle you've got these cattle grazing kind of nonchalantly. It's all a bit surreal. And I guess the motorists who come down from Sydney and other places have a real good chance to take it in this morning because they're pretty much traffic at a standstill all the way pretty much from here and as south of Statement Bay all the way up towards Nowra. So it's kind of bumper to bumper for at least 50 to 100 k's.
So this is where people are trying to get away. They're trying to get out of that region, which is what they're being advised to do.
Exactly. This is the first day they've been able to get anywhere north. They've been stuck in places like Bateman Bay and Ulla Dulla. Now that the road is being reopened, obviously people are heeding those warnings from the Rural Fire Service to get out and get out early before the, you know, ferocious conditions predicted for Saturday. And that's easier for some than others because their fuel is still a huge challenge. In places like Bateman Bay, there are still fuel shortages, so people can obviously get on the road and drive, but that involves having fuel. So people are lining up at fuel stations, and there's huge lines for them, and they're waiting for tankers to arrive. We're even hearing of in places around Bateman Bay where some petrol stations are imposing $60 limits, so people can only buy a certain amount of petrol to conserve the stock. And then others are coming with jerry cans and wondering whether they can, you know, get, say, $60 worth as well. So lots of different things happening just to sort of conserve supplies.
What about the evacuation centres still full and people still there? I understand in some towns they were concerned about running out of water and food.
Yeah, that was a real challenge. And there are still areas around places like Sussex Inlet where we're only just seeing power come back on, or even in some places power's still out. But road access is being very, very carefully managed. And if you're coming out of places like Lake Conjola, they're allowing about 20 cars out at a time. So this is obviously, being very carefully managed, that people eager to get food. There's no food there. There's very little petrol, very little water is a big challenge in places like Fisherman's Paradise. So all sorts of challenges. Now that we've got electricity, that is easing a lot of those challenges, because yesterday we were hearing that some of the sewage pumping stations were out, and that was causing all sorts of problems for the nearby beaches as well, sewage overflow.
Now, in terms of the people, no doubt you would have spoken to some of the people that have lost their homes, that have been impacted. What have been some of the tales that people have been telling you?
Oh, well, that's the thing. I mean, people are either involved in the RFS, or they know someone who's been involved in the RFS, or in a local charity, or, you know, some type of emergency disaster response. And those same people are also grappling with their own property losses. So we're hearing of people who, you know, have lost their home, but they're still out fighting fires. Also, of course, people are going to be really financially stressed, and we're just hearing that the New South Wales Shadow Minister for Housing, Ryan Park, has written to the Australian Banking Association urging banks to freeze mortgage repayments. So there's some hope that, you know, homeowners and affected small businesses will receive a little bit of a reprieve during what is a really, really difficult financial time and emotionally.
And no doubt you would be seeing people that are in evacuation centres that are struggling from the trauma too, because these are sort of unprecedented levels of trauma and loss that people have had to deal with.
Oh, make no mistake, the most, you know, the absolute amazing element of humanity has been on show, and I'd have got no idea how people have been able to, you know, live through such horrific circumstances that we saw on New Year's Eve and still, you know, manage to crack a smile or make a joke. You know, I particularly really noticed with the children, a lot of lovely families with their young ones, the kids are just taking this all in and reacting in such, it's just amazing the level of resilience and maturity you see from kids that are, you know, single-digit ages. It's just amazing. But obviously a lot of concern for their, you know, their respiratory conditions and just there's all this sort of particulate matter around. So, look, I think for a lot of people, they're probably still in a state of shock. And I think also it's just kind of, you know, they've been through some really horrible circumstances, but, you know, it's a question also of what's next.
What next is catastrophic fire conditions on Saturday, so people must be worried about that.
Well, that's the thing, and when they're saying conditions that are, you know, predicted to be worse than what we saw on New Year's Eve, I mean, that's just, people can't even comprehend that. All the people I've spoken to who've been, you know, defending their homes on New Year's Eve were saying they've never seen anything like it. Just the sound, that sort of that heat and the height of the flames, and just the absolute, like, the unstoppability of the way the embers were jumping kilometres ahead. When you're getting people describing it as, you know, something they've never seen and comparing it to recent fires like the Greenwater Creek fire and saying it's even worse than that one, that really just gives you a sense of, okay, if things are going to be worse this weekend than what we've seen, we're getting into some pretty uncharted territory.
Okay, Gavin, we'll leave you to it on your travels. Thanks for joining us on the program today.
Thanks, Michael.
Gavin Coote there, who's headed south from Sussex Inlet, and he's gone through Lake Cajola, and now he's in Ulla Dulla. So no doubt you'll hear some more reports from Gavin over the next couple of days. It's 8:08. We'll probably have a chat to him again tomorrow on the Country Hour. Just a couple of texts coming through. Someone's texting through, traffic isn't moving 5 kilometres north of Nowra on the Princes Highway. Someone's texted in saying the Snowy Mountain Highway is at a standstill just past Bega. And also someone saying that they've got issues with water in Milton at the moment. Any news on that? We'll try and find out and try and get you some advice on that in regards to the water situation later on in the program. And also someone asking whether or not they can head north from Sussex Inlet turn off. And sounds like there is a bit of activity in terms of emergency service vehicles on that highway at the moment. We're hearing some reports from that on the text line. And a reminder too that the RFS is saying to all tourists, domestic and international, that the entire south coast is a tourist leave zone. They're saying to leave the south coast ahead of dangerous fire conditions this week, which they say could be even worse than New Year's Eve, where lives and hundreds of homes were lost. So they're advising a tourist leave zone. All domestic and international tourists should leave the area, according to the RFS. Also, some other information. Fuel should now be available at the Maruya Caltex and the Shell at Naruma and the coastal road from Batemans Bay to Maruya. George Bass Drive has reopened. The Bega Mayor Kirsty McBain says the Bermagui evacuation point is going to be closed ahead of worsening conditions there in that town, and people should head south to the Bega showgrounds as well. And that's, of course, ahead of the big fire weather day on Saturday, where that strong change is coming through and hot northwesterly winds across most of the state, with fire dangers at their worst across the southeast of the state. It's coming up to 6:01 on the New South Wales Country Hour.
You're with Michael Condon for the New South Wales Country Hour on ABC Radio New South Wales.
With all the fire damage to the pastures, and also we've heard reports of thousands of dollars of fodder going up in smoke as a result of the fires. Well, the price of hay has remained stable over the holiday period, but the peak industry body is expecting a price rise as those supplies dwindle and bushfire-affected regions join in the demand, the already strong demand. And John McHugh is the chief executive of the Australian Fodder Industry Association. He told Jen Browning there are reasonable quantities of hay and other fodder products available in the market, though the prices are still quite high. He says the fire affected regions, where we've seen the hay burnt and pastures torched, will soon make more demands on what small supply is available as well soon.
So I suppose my concern is, and the concern of the Australian Fodder Industry Association, is that, you know, fodder and hay is not, there's not an infinite supply of this resource. We have got, you know, adequate levels of supply at this point in time. But as I say, the only thing which is going to really take the pressure off the fodder market is going to be rain. Now my attention really turns to autumn and an autumn break. And if we get, let's hope we get a really good autumn break and a widespread one, that will certainly take the heat out of the fodder market.
Are you expecting prices to go up?
I expect prices may rise a little. I don't think they're going to rise a lot more from where they are at the moment. They're already at, you know, pretty strong levels, and they've been at that level for quite some time.
And are you happy with the quality of the hay you're seeing go out at the moment?
Look, I think quality has been quite good. The reports that we're getting is that quality has been good. Yields have been down in some places. You know, depending on where you are in the country, I know WA has probably experienced quite a difficult hay production season. Well, it has experienced quite a difficult hay production season, as have other parts of the country as well. But look, generally, quality has been good, but we always say that if you're buying hay or other fodder products in, then, you know, give yourself some sense that what you are buying is what you're hoping you are buying by getting a feed test done. And, you know, even though we're in a difficult situation with supply and demand, I think adhering to those basic principles of making sure you get a feed test and understand what you are buying is still important.
Do you think there'll be enough fodder around to take us through to hopefully that autumn break?
I think there will be, but it's going to get tight, and it's going to get tight very, very quickly if we continue to see the level of demand that we're seeing now and the level of product that is being moved into the north. And of course, we can now expect when we get some relief from these fires in places like East Gippsland, that East Gippsland is also going to be in a deficit position in terms of hay and fodder products, and they're going to require supply as well. So, you know, the supply situation, whilst people have said to me, look, there's nothing, some people have said, look, you know, it looks pretty good. Yes, it does, but it's not an infinite resource. It is going to run out. And I'd say to people, as I've said over the last couple of days, you know, start thinking about what your requirements are moving forward. And I would probably be ratcheting in your purchase decision a little bit closer than what you originally had thought, because the situation, as I say, is not going to get any better until we get some relief. And that relief would be most likely this stage of where we are in the start of 2020 would be, a great autumn break, which gets some pasture growing and gets some water in dams and creeks and just gives people some relief that will take the pressure off the market.
Talking about the fodder situation, John McHugh, who's the chief executive of the Australian Fodder Industry Association, getting some reports here about someone who's saying in regards to leaving Sussex Inlet, instead of a slow police escort, they're saying, the police are saying, go as fast as you can. They're all being rushed to the highway. That one from Emma and Jamie. Also, Gwen is reporting that traffic has stopped heading north 30 kilometres south of Ulladulla. And also they're trying to get from Canberra to Canberra from Ulladulla. Does anyone know if the Kangaroo Valley Road is open to head that way back to Canberra? We'll try and get you some information on that after the news. And also Princess Highway open from Cobargo going towards Bega. Council workers apparently are letting people through, so That's the latest. Princes Highway open from Cobargo going towards Bega, and council workers are letting people through. You're listening to the New South Wales Country Hour. We'll be heading up to news time and more coverage. Stay listening to your local ABC for more coverage in regards to the bushfire situation on your local ABC.